The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Now, David Grimm, Science's online news editor, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news from our online daily news site, Science Now, including a story about wasps that pick up ants and fling them away. Dave, why on earth would a wasp do that?
That's a good question, Rob. Considering that wasps actually have more powerful tools at their disposal, they've got a stinger they can sting with, and they've got these giant jaws that could theoretically crush the ants. So why are they swooping in and picking up ants and just flinging them away? Well, Rob, researchers have some theories on that. But before we get into that, let me just tell you a little bit about what's actually going on here. What's happening is this was actually carried out in New Zealand, where wasps, specifically the yellow jacket wasp, has become a very problematic invasive species. There's actually the highest density of wasps in the world are in New Zealand. And the researchers in this study were trying to figure out, you know, we've got so many wasps and they're competing potentially with other insects like ants for the same kind of food sources. Have they developed any sort of unusual ways of fighting each other? And that's exactly what they saw. What they did was they went out into a forest that had a lot of wasps and they put a plate of tuna down on the ground. And in no short order, a group of Napoleonic ants, which are very aggressive ants, swarmed around the tuna and started eating it or taking it away. But then all of a sudden the wasps came too, and instead of stinging or biting these ants, they were grabbing the ants one by one and flinging them away from the tuna. And when the ants got flung away, they pretty much got scared off and wouldn't come back. And you actually can see some pretty cool videos of this happening on the site.
So have these two species interacted before? Is this some sort of new behavior that's never been seen before?
This is a new behavior that's never been seen before. And to answer your original question about why they do it, considering that they have all these other weapons at their disposal, these are very aggressive ants. In fact, they spit acid, and under a lot of conditions, they'll actually attack the wasps, even though the wasps are much bigger than the ant. They're also tiny chemical factories. They're producing all these sort of noxious chemicals you wouldn't want to get in your mouth if you're a wasp. And that's why the researchers think the wasps aren't biting them, because they would get a mouthful of poison. And so the best strategy for the wasps is really just to grab these ants and fling them away.
Does the strategy work? Are the wasps victorious? I mean, imagine there are lots of these ants.
Well, it's a good question, Robin. In the experiments the researchers set up, there wasn't a clear winner. But they think what might happen under more naturalistic situations is oftentimes you'll have this original scout ant that will come in, find the food, and then alert all the other ants that will then swarm around the food. And they think that maybe under those circumstances, the wasp may just grab that scout ant and throw him away, and he'd be so scared that he wouldn't go grab all of his buddies and go swarm the food source, and then the wasp would have it all to itself.
You're okay then with anthropomorphizing the ants, as it were.
Of course.
Okay, so what other stories have we brought with you this week?
Well, speaking of fear, Rob, this next story is about people's fear of heights and how it may be overcome, ironically, by giving them a hormone associated with stress.
Seems a little counterintuitive.
It does, Rob. And the reason this finding came about is that usually when people have a fear of something, whether it's heights or spiders, one of the common therapies is a process called exposure therapy. It's essentially forcing people to confront their fear. So if you've got a fear of spiders, then a researcher might actually put a spider in your hand and have you get really used to that experience so that you realize it's not so bad after all. And those positive memories replace the negative associations you had with spiders before. Same thing with a fear of heights. People can go through virtual reality simulations where they're walking on a steep ledge or something like that. And the more they do it, the more they overcome their fear. These treatments work, but it takes a lot of repetitions to make them effective. And as you can imagine, if you've got a fear of heights or a fear of spiders, having to confront these fears over and over and over again, even though you're becoming more accustomed to them, is a pretty unpleasant experience. So in this new study, researchers said, you know, is there a way to increase the efficacy of these therapies so that patients don't have to go through them as much? And one thing they noticed is that when people have these unpleasant experiences, they release stress hormones. And previous studies have shown that these hormones seem to help us create these new safe memories that give us these more sort of positive memories to replace the bad ones. And they also inhibit those fearful memories. So the researchers said, you know, if we're producing these hormones anyways and we're having a stressful experience, and these hormones seem to be helping us get over that stressful experience, what if we gave people even more of these hormones when they were having that stressful experience to see if it would help them overcome their fear faster? And it worked. In this study, researchers focused on the fear of height, and they had 40 people with what's called acrophobia, which is a fear of heights, and they did this exposure therapy with them. And they had these people walk in this virtual environment where they had to ascend tall elevators, walk over bridges, and things like that. Even the researcher said it was pretty scary even for him to take a walk through this environment.
All the while knowing that they're actually on the ground and not really moving at all.
Exactly. But people with a fear of heights still get very scared in these situations. And what the researchers did was they took a few of these people and gave them a placebo, but the other ones they gave cortisol pills, and cortisol is one of these stress hormones. And what they found, according to surveys that the volunteers filled out, was that those who had taken the cortisol pills had about a 60% drop in their fear during these experiments versus a 40% drop in fear for the people that just took the placebo.
So the exposure therapy worked in both cases, but those who got the cortisol, the stress hormone, it did seem to work faster.
It worked even better. That combination of the cortisol and the exposure therapy really bumped these people up to a new level where they were shedding a lot more of their fear. And what's more, when these people ascended a virtual elevator about a month after their treatment, the participants who had received cortisol showed just a 1/5 increase in skin conductance. And this is sort of a measure of stress compared with subjects who had just received the placebo. So not only did the volunteers who took cortisol overcome their fear quicker, their fears were abated for a much longer period of time.
And not just according to their own perception, but actual skin conductance.
Exactly.
Where else might this combination therapy be used?
Well, as we talked about before, there's a fear of spiders. This could be helpful with that. But there's other types of fears that are more complicated, such as obsessive compulsive disorder, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other fears that researchers call more general fears. And they think that, you know, the therapies that are available for those could also be improved by treating patients with cortisol or another stress hormone. It might make these therapies a lot more effective than they are now. But they haven't done those studies yet.
Okay, so last story. What's this last one about?
Well, Rob, now for something completely different. This last story is about how to fold a shopping bag made of steel.
Steel isn't something I typically associate with folding, Dave, more like crushing or crumpling.
Well, that's a really good point, Robin. Why would you want to fold a steel bag in the first place? But it turns out that there are a lot of applications for folding very rigid materials. Think about when you move to a new house. You buy all those boxes that are totally flat and you've got to reassemble them and you've got to construct the bottom and reconstruct the top. Well, what if you could just get a box that was flat and you just had to push something on the box and it would automatically unfold itself into a regular box, top intact, bottom intact. All you have to do is start throwing stuff in there. Not only would that be a great thing for moving, but it's also be a big boon for the packaging industry, which you can imagine deals with millions or billions of cardboard boxes every year. So there's a lot of applications to this technology, but the problem is, how do you fold something as rigid as steel? And the answer is origami.
The art of Japanese paper folding.
Exactly. What the researchers did in this new study was they created a pattern of creases that they could overlay on a material like steel. And what these creases do is they allow the steel, and in this case it was a steel shopping bag, and you actually see a picture of that on the site and a picture of it folding. They were able to turn this very rigid shopping bag flat just by folding it along these creases that they had designed. Now, researchers have done this before. In fact, the solar sails that researchers are now putting on spacecraft in space to help catch the sun's light and help provide energy for a lot of these craft, they are essentially origamied flat so they can be easily transported into space and then unfolded there. But there you're dealing with a very simple structure. You know, a sail is just basically like a giant rectangle. Here we're talking about something like a shopping bag, which is not a very simple structure. And again, you can't simplify things by taking out the bottom or the top in case it was a box. You're really trying to keep this very complicated structure in its original conformation so that when you unfold it, there's no extra work to be done.
So the ultimate in reusable shopping bags, I guess. When do I get to see one?
Well, Rob, it may not be too far down the line. These researchers are already starting to talk to manufacturers about implementing this design. But what's really cool is down the line, if this really catches on, experts are envisioning even wackier ideas like a television that could fold up, or even an entire building that could be folded up, transported somewhere, and then unfolded. So a lot of really cool applications for this technology, some a little closer to reality than others.
Okay. Well, thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, for Science Now, we've got a story about bacteria that act like dental floss, and also a story about an artificial leaf that could provide a potentially limitless source of energy. And on Science's policy blog, Science Insider, we've got a new survey to come out of India about the number of endangered tigers that are there and whether that number is going up or down. And also, we're continuing our coverage of the Japanese quake. This week, we're really focusing on the impact it's having on the U.S., the way we prepare for earthquakes, the way we design our nuclear power plants, and other responses that U.S. experts are having to the crisis in Japan. So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news, plus all the stories on the science policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.